been a long time, but we are back. We're rested, Jake. We've really put in, you know, some time in the weight room and had some relaxing tea. Whatever people do on bye weeks. I'm Andy Smith, the Packer noob, who obviously knows nothing about bye weeks.
And I'm Jake, the Packer veteran. Yeah, we did an unusual thing this year. Usually what we do during the bye weeks, or so we have done the last 2 years, is we have kind of a shorter episode the week before the bye and then a shorter episode the week after the bye. But because of the way things worked out, we just decided to lump it all together to give you a more normal episode, talking about both the Packers' last game against San Francisco and then the upcoming game against the Rams.
We gave everyone collectively a bye week.
Yeah.
Ourselves included.
Exactly.
Do they just sip tea during the bye week, or is that just what I think they do?
I mean, I'm sure there are some people who do that. I don't know who, but I'm sure someone does.
This is a real question. Do they actually have, like, full days off during, like, bye weeks? How do teams normally run that? Like, let's say, like, could Aaron Rodgers go for a weekend in, or not, probably not a weekend, but, like, could he go to, like, a Tuesday through Thursday trip to Hawaii if he wanted to?
I think some players actually do that. Like, usually when the bye happens, players kind of take off for that week or so. I mean, they have a day when they're supposed to be back, and they resume team activities, usually not till the next week. But yeah, usually, unless you're injured and, you know, you have to let the training staff work on you, I think the way it works is most players kind of take off and do whatever they want.
Interesting. The whole week, or is it just like a couple days? Does it fluctuate?
I think it depends on the team and the situation. I mean, you know, if you're a bad team, it's like maybe you don't have so many days off, or maybe everybody gets, you know, I honestly don't know. That'd be an interesting, someone should write an article about that.
That should be like a Hard Knocks, like mid-season, like what players do during the bye week. I was curious about that, or like what their actual like day-to-day is. It's always very interesting because, you know, like whenever there's like documentaries or whatever, everyone's just interested in like the actual practices or whatever. But I always find it more interesting to be like, so how do these people have actual lives outside of these things?
Yeah. So I do think it is teams just usually get around a week off and go wherever. But
And drink tea.
Lots of tea. So, Andy, let's talk about the game that happened, I guess, a couple weeks ago now. And it might seem like old news, but we haven't talked about it yet. So let's talk about that game against the 49ers on Monday Night Football. I'm curious to know what your feeling was after this game concluded.
It's a really interesting game, I think, because in the moment watching it, like if we recorded this podcast on Tuesday, I would have been like really high and excited just because, you know, that final drive and you see it on like Twitter and SportsCenter, like the whole thing is like Aaron Rodgers is incredible and like he's amazing and like he always, when the game's on the line, he's great. Like I saw one tweet that was like, if I want a dynasty, I'll sign Tom Brady, but if I want to win with a minute left, I'm signing Aaron Rodgers. Like, you know, stuff like that. Like,
right,
you know,
yeah.
This big hype. And it does feel great. And I think we won. And that's the most important thing. But I also think for three quarters of that game, for the most part, the Packers on both sides of the ball really fell short. And it was a really frustrating game to watch for a long time. And then, and this is becoming kind of a sad pattern the last season and a half or so, is because of the talent and because of maybe just with the will of some of our veterans, like we pull it out, but it's not a great performance overall. That's I think in a week of reflecting after it, that's sort of my takeaway. I don't have a ton of stats to back that up, but that's sort of my gut and having reflected on it a little bit. How about you?
Yeah, you know, it is one of the things where the game ends, Rodgers engineers a game-winning drive, Mason Crosby goes down and kicks a game-winning field goal. As time expires, it all feels great. You know, we win, but you look at the team we played, and actually I saw a Twitter post about this where, and there was a lot of things, like you said, on social media, a lot of NFL players, you know, other pro athletes were, you know, kind of espousing the, you know, the brilliance of Aaron Rodgers, and don't get me wrong, that game winning drive was great, but, you know, someone was saying, well, it was against the 49ers at home, a team that I think the Packers were favored pretty handily to beat. And I said, like, you know, we can't necessarily take them lightly, although I kind of feel like I still did. I did tweet this after the game that I probably took them a little bit lightly since, you know, they're playing their backup, CJ Beathard, and they had some injuries. And
yeah, it'd be one thing, just real quick going off of that, like, if they had Jimmy Garoppolo, this whole season, I think, for the 49ers was sort of like a consolidation year, kind of like what this year is going to be for my Lakers to switch sports. But, like, you know, like, seeing what they got, there's something exciting, there's some energy, and you want to build towards the future. And so it'd be one thing if this was like, you know, an emerging young team had a good game, because that happens, right? Mm. Young teams have like good games and hit some of the favorites or some of the things. But yeah, since they didn't have Garoppolo, it really felt like all that momentum was lost, and then for them to really outshine the Packers at parts in this game was really, whoa.
Yeah, it was whoa. And you look at it, really, if the Packers don't win the turnover battle, which they did in this game, they had three turnovers, or the 49ers had three turnovers, Packers had none. And if it was not for not really a blatant illegal contact call on Richard Sherman, but I think it was the right call, but it wasn't it wasn't flagrant. I guess I'll word that.
Yeah. It's one of those tough calls, kind of holding the same thing. Like, you can see people holding almost, a little cliche, there's holding on every play, but mm-hmm. it's just going to be bad enough for them to call it. It's kind of the same with illegal contact, both offensively and defensively sometimes in the secondary.
Yeah. So, if you take that call out and you take away the turnovers, I don't think the Packers win the game. If you take away the illegal contact, on that play, Rodgers got sacked. I know we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but Rodgers got sacked on that play. The Packers had the ball at their own 14-yard line. They would have had to punt with about a minute to go, and maybe it's the 49ers going down and kicking the game-winning drive. Their offense had been pretty much unstoppable at that point. The Packers did force get a couple stops on defense, but a couple of those were because of bad throws by Beathard. A couple of them were because of turnovers, which, you got to give the Packers credit for making plays as far as turnovers are concerned, but mm-hmm. I feel like this is a game the Packers should have won much more easily than they did.
And it was a weird game, speaking of Rodgers, in the sense of I felt like he was the most mobile he's been since, that first drive in that first game when he got hurt,
mm-hmm.
or he got hurt after that. But I also thought his accuracy and sort of his mechanics were actually worse than they've been the past couple of weeks, and that really hurt us. Outside of those great drives, which, that counts, so
right.
We'd have to consider that. But there were points where he was just flat out missing throws and missing receivers, and it wasn't like throws to, a couple of them were to wide receivers, new wide receivers, so okay, maybe they're building, whatever. But there were some throws to like Devontae that were just off, mm-hmm. There was some checkdowns that were just a little bit off. He got, I think, at least one, can't think of words today, illegal down, what's that called?
Intentional grounding.
Man, couldn't think of that. He got something which he doesn't normally get. It was a weird performance by Aaron.
Yeah, well, even the first touchdown he threw to Devontae, Devontae Adams was open going to his right, but he kind of reached back to his left and he was so open that it didn't matter. But I feel like if they had better coverage, the defensive back probably could easily knock that pass down. So even things like that, it just seemed like he was a little bit off his game, of course, until the end when the throws he made on the last drive were very good, and he was definitely on his game then. But yeah, it seemed like he was having trouble with the knee again. He had to go back to the bigger brace after getting it sort of re-injured against Detroit. Yeah, some just seemed off, but, and it, again, it's weird because they did enough to win, obviously, because they won the game, but the overall performance just didn't seem... It just wasn't that impressive, I don't think, overall. I think it kind of plays into the narrative of the Packers are a subpar team being buoyed by their, next-level quarterback, which I have to say at this point, I don't disagree.
Yeah, and I think, we talked about this, you asked me about it at the end of the last podcast. I think McCarthy's seat, if anything, is warmer after this game, even though he won the game.
Yeah, I would say so. I think especially, I read an article, I can't remember where it was, but this is like McCarthy's most important bye week ever, because as we said at the end of last week, they're going into the toughest stretch of the season, and Aaron Rodgers even said at the end of this game on Monday night that the Packers will find out what kind of team they are, because as we said, four of the next five games are on the road, including,
brutal road games.
Yeah, all four of them. We have the Rams this week, then the Patriots, then we get to go home and play the Dolphins, who have been kind of up and down, more down recently. Then we play the Seahawks on a short week on Thursday night, and then we play Minnesota in Minnesota. So that is rough. And at 3-2-1 right now,
that could be five losses.
It really could be.
I don't think it will be. I think the Packers are good enough for they'll win a couple of those. But I don't think it's unreasonable to think we get 2-3. And I would be happy. I think I would consider it a win if we went 3-2 in that stretch, which would put us at five. What would our record be then? My math is, if we went 3-2 on this five,
that would put us at 6-4-1, I believe.
Yeah, so
because we're 3-2-1 currently, so
yeah. Yeah, so that's okay, but that's also not by any means a sure playoff you know, berth, especially if one of the games we lost was to the Vikings.
Right. Yeah. If you lose another, if you lose to the Vikings, that would be huge, just because that's a divisional game, of course. But we'll talk about the NFC North.
Yes,
we're
going
to
hurt ourselves.
Yeah, we're going to hurt ourselves again.
Let's talk about our defense, because Jake has a pretty great, well-worded note here on our notes for the show that CJ Beathard and co looked way too good. Jake, why did they look way too good? What was our defense not doing?
You know, I think part of it was not getting a ton of pressure on Beathard. I mean, the Packers didn't have a ton of sacks in this game. I'm just going to check my notes here real quick. Only two sacks in this game against the 49ers. Two running backs. I mean, Raheem Mostert, who had 12 carries at 87 yards. That's 7 yards a carry. That's pretty rough. Matt Breida, who I think got injured partway through this game and then kind of came back a little bit later. He had 14 carries for 61 yards. I mean, it's only 4.4 yards a carry, but still, two running backs had a pretty good day. Receiving-wise, they didn't. The one guy who really beat him, obviously, I mean, if you watch the game, you know it's Marquise Goodwin, who I did say if he played, he might be trouble for the Packers with his speed. And he showed on his first touchdown, basically running straight down the middle of the field and getting a good throw from Beathard and beating everybody to the end zone. And then his other touchdown, running a nice crisp route and then being able to use his speed again to beat Tremont Williams and get to the end zone again. So he obviously had a huge factor, played a huge factor in this game as well. You know, again, Packers are dealing with injuries like everybody else, but, you know, Jaire Alexander was out. He might be our best cornerback right now, at least in terms of being able to. I think he could have probably guarded Goodwin better than anybody we had guarding him on Monday night. It's just, it is puzzling.
Like, can we talk a little bit about defensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator? We now have
Mike Patine.
Patine. 6 games to see. Again, I'm the Packer noob, not the expert at all. Like, our defense just doesn't look good. Like, the thing that, you know, you were talking about preseason as far as, like, what they were thinking bringing this guy in is that he's supposed to be very creative with his blitz packages. And, you know, that makes me think of, you know, classic Steelers sort of zone blitzing in disguise, that kind of thing. And, like, those sort of defenses. And, like, it definitely has not been that.
Right. I mean, I think he has done a better job of calling up.
Outside of the Bills game, I should say. The Bills game looks great.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but I think Bills.
You have to attribute that more to the opponent, yeah. I mean, I think he has done a good job of designing pressures that do get home, and actually I'll mention one of those specifically in a little bit here, because it seems like he has designed a couple blitzes where, you know, one or two guys do get free and cause the quarterback to scramble immediately, which seemed to be something that Dom Capers was unable to do his last couple years here, or some people tell you even longer than that. I mean, like I said, I wholly agree with the change. It seemed like the players are still kind of getting used to his system. You know, I don't know how much of that breaks down to him implementing things, to the individual defensive coaches trying to work out assignments. And some of it might just be, you know, the players, if it's a simplified scheme like they're saying it is, you know, maybe they're not making the right reads. And, you know, like we've had blown coverages where a corner, like against Detroit, where a cornerback, you know, plays to the outside thinking he has safety help, and then the safety goes down to guard a tight end over the middle, and the wide receiver is wide open. It just seems like, I think it's a confluence of different things for the defense right now.
I guess playing devil's advocate, it's after 6 games, it's tough to then say, like, okay, so a good coach should probably see that and should start to get, you know, their secondary guys to recognize that, like, a good coach, obviously, not every team is perfect, but you work on your weaknesses, and it just doesn't seem like there's a progression of getting better, I guess.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And honestly, I think probably the biggest problem with the defense is the thing that I know you're going to bring up, your favorite guy, Mr. Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack! Everybody drink.
But, I mean, the Packers don't have a great pass rush. I mean, they have 18 sacks.
But we have 2 first-round draft picks in the next 2 years, and Aaron's going to get older.
I mean, they have 18 sacks, which is right about in the middle of the league, which, of course, that was buoyed by a 6-sack game against Buffalo, which, again, I think that has more to do with the opponent than anything else. But, yeah, they just got to – and that's why I think Patinas felt like he has to blitz so much, because, you know, the guys on the edge rushers, you know, Matthews and Nick Perry and, you know, Reggie Gilbert and all those guys, they're not – getting, you know, and actually I think Matthews has been getting a good pass rush actually the last couple weeks. He just hasn't gotten very many. I think he had 1 sack in this game against San Francisco, but it seems like he's just not getting all the way home, which, you know, that's kind of the point. Yeah, so, I mean, only two sacks this week. Clay Matthews had one. Kenny Clark had the other one. They did have four quarterback hits, which isn't a whole lot, but, you know, it's at least they weren't totally, you know, toothless on the rush there. So,
yeah, it's just like, you know, when you play passing teams, which most teams in the NFL these days are, you either need to have really good coverage to give a mediocre line time to get pressure on the quarterback, or you need a great line so that your weak secondary, you know, can handle it for a little while before you put the quarterback under pressure. And it just seems the Packers have neither of those things. We're just mediocre on both sides. Not terrible. We don't get shredded, but yeah. We definitely don't, you know, make plays.
Yeah, you're right. They're not getting shredded. I mean, C.J. Beathard, I mean, he only completed 16 passes for 245 yards, had the two touchdowns, had the pick that led to the, you know, game-winning touchdown.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, nothing amazing.
And especially if you take out Goodwin, especially a couple big plays, like,
yeah.
They didn't get much through the air.
No.
But, I mean, those big plays happened, which obviously put us in a position to lose, and without a great comeback, we would have. Which that would have been, I mean, I think you tweeted out after the game that the season was saved, because I think, really, it would have been. If we go into this stretch 2-3, I think, really, might be over.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, you know, the Packers needed to win this game, and they did. The way they did it is giving me pause, especially with this brutal stretch coming up.
It wasn't the confidence builder that you'd want, right? No. Ideally, we would have wanted to win this, I don't know, 30-14, feel real good, maybe even Aaron gets to sit out the final drive in the fourth, doesn't have to kneel, and you go into the bye week feeling real good, you had two solid wins, and, you know, pump yourself up to go on this big road trip. But kind of feels like we're just escaping, just surviving, and that just doesn't build momentum.
No, you're right. Now, before we get all down the dumps here, there are some good things that happen in this game.
I like it. Yes, let's go positives.
The rookie wide receivers, obviously, Jarmel Allison didn't play in this game. Randall Cobb was out again.
Yep. They stepped up.
Yeah.
Best game of the season.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling, of course, the first play from scrimmage, had a huge gain. He also had a catch on the last drive, as did Equanimeous St. Brown. Also, Economy St. Brown had a nice block on the Aaron Jones run that was called a touchdown and then called back because he did not cross the plane before he went out of bounds. But, you know, when they needed to, they made plays. And even Jamon Moore, who has kind of been a ghost so far this year, showed up with a catch for 10 yards and a first down, so that was good. Also, Mason Crosby, you know, after having the worst game of his life, was 4-for-4 on field goals, including the game winner that was pretty short. It was like 27 yards, but also a 51-yarder that, you know, was about as straight and true as field goals get. And he made all three of his extra points. So see him bounce back, that was also encouraging.
And that's really important for games down the line.
Yes.
That, you know, when they're at the 40 or whatever and it's a 51-yarder, you know, mm-hmm. The Packers have confidence in him again. That psychologically, because I think, you know, ability-wise, it's Mason Crosby. They know that he can make those shots.
It's all there.
But it's to know that psychologically he's back and locked in.
Right. And then lastly, I want to talk about unsung hero. I don't know if you had anybody in mind, but I'm actually going to say HaHa Clinton Dix. Now, I know maybe sometimes in pass coverage you didn't have a great game, but I thought he made two big plays that really shaped the outcome of the game. He forced a fumble on, I can't remember his name, the fullback for San Francisco. Like, phonetically spelled out, it's about impossible. It's like Juszczyk. I think Juszczyk. He caught a deep pass over the middle. HaHa Clinton Dix caused a fumble that the Packers recovered, went down and got a field goal. Then, at the end of the game, on the play where Kevin King had that interception, the Packers bought a blitz, and Clinton Dix was actually the guy who got home and got a nice, you know, legal clean hit on Beathard that I think maybe had him overthrow the ball a little bit, and King was able to pick it off. So based on those two things, I'm going to give it to Mr. Clinton Dix.
My unsung hero, that's a great pick. My unsung hero, it's a pretty deep cut. You might not even have heard of this guy. Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback. No, I'm just kidding.
Who's that?
Yeah. I'm going to use my favorite criteria of unsung hero is not obviously someone who is known and really great, but I think someone who's quietly all of a sudden been sort of an old reliable. And when you become sort of old reliable, you don't get as much accolades. But I really want to give some shout outs to Davante Adams. I mean, remember, for a long time, the talk about him was, you know, he really needs to take that next step, or he needs to be, you know, someone we can rely on, especially when Jordy was here. It was always sort of Jordy was the main guy, and then, oh, if only Davante could really come into his own. Now it's Davante. He's the guy, and he has been great this season. He's scored in almost every game of the season
mm-hmm.
with these injuries, and they were able to really focus on him. He's still a threat. He's still dangerous. He's still getting my fantasy team points. That's not why I'm choosing him. Just throwing that out. But I do want to give a shout out to Devontae, who's been very consistent. One of the best wide receivers in the NFL this year. So way to go, Devontae.
Yeah, he really has turned. I mean, it was really the 2015 season when Jordy Nelson went down, and everyone, you know, he had a pretty good rookie year, so everyone was kind of hoping he was going to step up, and he had a really bad year. I know a lot of people thought that maybe we shouldn't re-sign him or give him an extension, but honestly, ever since then, he's been great. I mean, he was one yard short of a 1,000-yard season the next year. Last year, in a season where most of the games he played were without Aaron Rodgers, he made the Pro Bowl for the first time, which I remember some people thought that he was a bad receiver who Rodgers was kind of, you know, buoying up, as we said before, which he proved wrong last year. And then this year, yeah, he's, I mean, this game, he had 10 catches for 132 yards and two scores. He's definitely producing, even with the, you know, sometimes guys sign big contracts and get complacent. He's obviously, you know, not resting on his laurels, so.
And there's definitely a point, especially in that first half, where the Packers overall did not play well, where it felt like either people were just dropping passes or Aaron was off or wasn't communicating well, and it was like, oh, finally, a completion to Devontae. It was like always sort of the the thing that we could hold on to, like, okay, that's at least working. And right. So unsung hero to him.
Yeah, I like the pick. So the Packers, like we said, they do win the game 33-30 at the end of it. Packers are now 3-2-1 on the now almost halfway through the year season. And talk about their next opponent in a second here. Mandy, first, let's go around and see what everybody else in the NFC North did in NFC North Watch.
Meli Kaliki Maka in the NFC North Watch.
Nice. So, in the NFC North Watch, let's talk about our favorite rivals, the Vikings. So they beat the Cardinals at home 27-17. That game was actually close for a while, but then eventually the Vikings pulled away, as I kind of thought they would. And then they went into New York and beat the Jets 37-17, which was also close until about the fourth quarter. But obviously, you know, they were favored in both those games.
So obviously we're doing games. Both weeks that the bye week that we missed and then the week that the
Packers didn't play.
Just in case that wasn't clear to somebody out there.
We're catching up on the two games that happened. Yeah, so
this is week 6 and 7 of the NFL season.
That's correct. So the Vikings are now 4-2-1 and they will play at home against the Saints on Sunday Night Football this week. So it's a rematch of the, you know, I don't know if it's officially the Minnesota Miracle or the Minneapolis Miracle. I've heard both used ever since the playoffs last year, but either way, it's a rematch of the divisional game last year, in which, of course, the Vikings won that last-second sort of Hail Mary pass to Stephon Diggs.
Is that in Minneapolis?
It's in Minneapolis, okay. So that should be pretty good. Saints are looking real good. They've only lost one game. That should be a very good Sunday Night Football matchup. So as long as you have a TV, I think you'll get to watch it.
And the Vikings now match ours? They're 3-2-1 as
they're
well?
4-2-1. So they're a game.
Oh, that's right. Because they haven't had their bye.
Okay. So let's go down and talk to the Bears. So the Bears in week 6 lost to the Dolphins 31-28 in overtime. That was really a back and forth, kind of a crazy game. And then
remember that, because we're going to play the Dolphins and we're going to be tempted to overlook them. But I think they're a good team that can be good. Sorry, keep going.
Yes, no, I would agree. And then this week the Bears played the Patriots
and
lost 38-31. Threw a Hail Mary at the end of the game, came up 1 yard short.
Literally one yard short,
and cannot tie the game and send it to overtime and get the win. So they lost both those games. So they are now 3-3, and they will play at home against the Jets.
I will say, Sunday. Though, Trubisky on that final Hail Mary play, dare I say it, Aaron Rodgers-esque. Got a lot of power on that with someone coming right at
him. With someone right in his face, yeah, he did get quite a bit of power, but I think it was because that person was in his face that's the reason the ball didn't get to the end zone. He looked pretty good on that play. And then we had the Lions, who were on bye in week 6 and then came back in week 7 and beat the Dolphins in Miami 32-21. So they're also now 3-3, and they will play the Seahawks at home this week. So we're the only NFC North team on the road this week, which doesn't bode well. But so that's what's going on in the NFC North. Now, Andy, let's talk about your hometown team, sort of, the L.A. Rams, clearly the best team in the NFL right now. I know there's a lot of things you could look at when you say that, but let's just start with the basic, most obvious fact that they're the only team that hasn't lost yet. They're 7-0. They've had a couple close games. They beat Seattle by 2 points, but they have looked real good pretty much all year. I mean, they played a pretty good game against the Vikings in week 3, I think it was, or week 4. But yeah, they've looked good in pretty much all phases. Don't have a whole ton of weaknesses. Have a pretty good roster across the board. Like I said, they're second in offense in terms of yards, second in scoring, seventh in total defense in terms of yards per game. They're the real deal.
It is crazy how small the margins are in the NFL, just because everyone is so talented and coaches make such a difference. Like, remember, like, even just like 2 or 3 years ago, like when the Rams were in St. Louis, they were just like a heaping pile of burning trash.
Yeah, they, like, they weren't very good.
You're right. Like, they are undisputed right now, the best team in the NFL. It's just interesting, this sort of a random side observation, but it's just interesting how quickly that changes in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, they get the coach, Sean McVay, who everyone is hailing as, you know, this brilliant offensive mind, and he's the same age as me, born the same year as me, so I kind of think about it's like, man, I could be there, you know, that could be me coaching the Rams right now, which is a weird thought, because, yeah, only 32 years old. But there's also a lot of roster turnover. I mean, obviously, they have a new quarterback, Jared Goff. They have Todd Gurley, who they drafted in 2015. They've added Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh. They've added Brandon Cooks. They have all these guys on weapons on the outside. Cooper Kupp, who actually, we'll get to that in a little bit, but he probably won't play on Sunday.
Cooper Kupp crushed me when I played Jake in fantasy earlier this year. Yeah, so I'm still pretty bad.
I had him the week they played the Vikings, and he had, I think, what, 150 yards and 2 touchdowns or something ridiculous?
I don't want to talk.
It was pretty great.
I had that game in hand, too.
They've also got Greg Zuerlein, their kicker back, who a lot of people think is, you know, one of the better kickers in the game, along with a good punter.
They're a really good team.
They're just a good team all around. The only weakness, I really think, their biggest weakness they have is their linebacking core. And it's not bad. It's just not as good as the rest of their positions. They're also a little bit banged up. Like we said, Cooper Kupp is doubtful to play in this game. He's coming off a concussion and a knee injury. I read a report today. Sean McVay said he is doubtful. He's making progress, but they don't think he's probably going to play. The other guy who probably isn't going to play either is cornerback Aqib Talib, who was one of their many free agent acquisitions this offseason. Which means they'll be starting Marcus Peters, who is very good, and Sam Shields, who is back in the NFL after, you know, he got a concussion in the first game of the 2016 season with the Packers. Didn't play the rest of that season. The Packers kind of let him go because the medical team was not comfortable clearing him to play because he kept having headaches. So he might be playing this game with a chip on his shoulder, trying to prove to the Packers that he still can play in this league. And it'll be interesting to see who he matches up against and how that all works out. I mean, honestly, I wish nothing but the best for the guy. You know, I'm happy he's playing again and is seemingly playing well. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see him play his old teammates on Sunday. And, then, I mean, you talk about the Rams, how good their roster is. There's two guys, I think, that stand out on both sides of the ball. On offense, it's obviously Todd Gurley. Just having another monster season. Had a monster year last year. Is picking up right where he left off. Leads the NFL in rushing. And he has 11 total TDs already this year. The guy is just an immense talent. Only 24 years old. I mean, he is going to be ruling the rushing titles in this league for a long time. And then on the other side of the ball, they have Aaron Donald, who was holding out but is back. Leads the NFL in sacks with 8. Remember, he's an interior defensive. He's not an edge rusher. He's an interior defensive lineman. Has 8 sacks already. Constantly gets pressures. Constantly in the opposing quarterback's face. Our interior line, you know, Corey Linsley, Byron Bell, and Lane Taylor are going to be, they're going to be having their hands full trying to figure out who's going to stop him wherever he lines up. Because he is a force to be reckoned with, for sure.
I just got scared as you're talking about those two guys. Todd Gurley was, you were talking about him, I thought, oh, well, you know, at least we're good at stopping the run. Oh, wait, no, we're not great at stopping the run. And then, oh, at least we're good at pass protection, but we're not super great at that either.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, they're just good all around. They have two really, I mean, these guys are really their two studs. And, you know, Jared Goff, after looking pretty mediocre his first season in the league with Jeff Fisher, you know, they bring in Sean McVay, and suddenly he looks like a top 10 quarterback. Like, I don't know what it was, but the transformation was so quick and so sudden that they're just having him, he's looked real good. I mean, that's all you really can say about it. So, obviously, Andy, we're not feeling great about this game against the Rams. It's in Los Angeles. Again, the Rams are rolling. They're unbeaten. They have a very talented team, even with Talib and Kupp most likely not playing. The thing I came up with for how to beat these guys, as I said before, their linebackers are probably the weakest part of their defense for sure. So you might have to do a strategy where you go over the middle. So this could be where Jimmy Graham, who actually had a pretty good game last week, 4 catches for 105 yards, he could play a big factor. I also wouldn't mind seeing them, you know, try to create matchups. Maybe have Ty Montgomery come out of the backfield and get a linebacker on him in coverage.
Some drop downs.
Yeah, some check downs. Try to make him miss tackles. Maybe send receivers over the middle. You know, if linebackers are supposed to be covering an area if they're playing zone, I think that's going to be their best bet. And I think they need to, again, I feel like I sound like a broken record, but they're going to need to run the ball more if they want to keep the Los Angeles pass rush, which, again, their edge rushers actually aren't super great, but Aaron Donald is great. And if they want to keep him from teeing off against Aaron Rodgers. They're going to need to run the ball a lot. At this point, I don't know if I care who it is. I mean, of course, I'd like to see Aaron Jones get more carries. But if it's him or Montgomery or Williams, we need to not shy away from running the ball so much and just run it. And
which there hasn't been a game this season we've done that.
No. And maybe, you know, you're, the hope in my heart is that, you know, you go into the bye week, you kind of take stock of the season as it's played out so far. You make some adjustments. I hope the Packers come out in the second half of the year with the goal in mind, the explicit goal in mind, to run the ball more, have more balance on offense. And as great as Aaron Rodgers is, and he is great, I don't want to take anything away from him, especially the way he's been playing with an injury. You know, he can't do it all himself. He needs help.
And we can't run these long route plays anymore.
Yeah.
Like, that's so heavy. Like, obviously, that needs to be part of an offense. But it seems, especially against San Francisco, almost every play was sort of a 15-plus yard, slow-developing pass play. And, like, we just can't do that anymore. We don't have good enough wide receivers with guys hurt, and we don't have like a strong enough run game to really make cornerbacks and linebackers honest.
Yeah, I will say Cobb and Allison Ekster are supposed to be back for this game.
Oh, all, good, both.
All signs are they're going to play.
Oh, that's great.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't think we should, you know, phase out that part of the offense, but I do think we need to run the ball more because running the establishing the run game can only help everybody else. It makes the defense more honest. It makes play action work way better than if your running game is not effective. To me, it's a no-brainer. We just have to get it established. And even if, you know, let's say whoever gets the most carries only has like 60 yards, you know, at least we tried. It seems like we tried for a little bit, and then McCarthy decides, oh, we'll just throw the ball. And again, I'm not an NFL coach, so I'm not an expert, but I feel like we just need to stay more committed to the run to have a better chance of winning.
But as previously said, you are the same age as Sean McVay, so you are just as good a coach. So, like, obviously.
Maybe I'd like to think that, but that's definitely not the case. I mean, Sean McVay is apparently this brilliant mind, and, I mean, I can pick plays in Madden, but that's about all I can do, so.
It is great that Cobb is back for playing in the slot for what you mentioned, that the linebacking corps practiced the weakness of this defense. Mm-hmm. To hopefully get some linebackers matched up on him inside and getting some quick slants and hits that way and well, yeah, more of that short game. Good power running, plus getting some of those short throws to set up some of those longer things, or especially the play action. I was amazed how, for our lack of actual run game, we ran play action.
Yeah, well, and that's actually you bring up a good point. They did run a bunch of those kind of what they're called naked bootlegs, where they have Rodgers kind of fake that up and then roll out to the outside. And they worked during the first drive, and then we kept trying to run them, but San Francisco clearly, you know, figured it out, and they were kind of all over Rodgers. There were a couple times where he tried to do that, and there were two guys right in his face. Basically, run the ball, try to exploit the linebackers however you can, get favorable matchups, get them on wide receivers, get them on running backs out of the backfield, you know.
It feels like, when I was watching that and thinking about that, I play basketball more than football, so it reminded me on, like, the playground. Like, when a guy, you know, fakes a three one time, and the guy jumps, and then he gets an open layup. And then, like, the rest of the game, he just keeps pumping the threes. And everyone just says, don't jump, he's not going to shoot. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't work anymore.
Yep.
But the guy keeps doing it. That's kind of what the Packer offense seemed to do. Like, it worked once, so we're going to keep doing those naked bootlegs.
Yeah, they kept doing the play action, and the 49ers weren't buying it. Because, you know, we kind of, again, the second half, we kind of stopped running the ball, so.
Yep, you got to make a three, and then they jump for the fake.
Right.
Sorry, now, I'm mixing my metaphors here.
That's all right. I enjoy the mixed up metaphors. One thing I will say is this game does kind of remind me of the 2012 season. Now, early in that season, the Packers were 2-3, coming off a bad loss to the Colts. They were up by 2 touchdowns in this game. They let the Colts come back and rally to win. Of course, that was Mason Crosby's bad year. He missed a potential game-winning field goal. And then the next week, they had to go to Houston and play a previously undefeated Texans team, who at that point looked like the best team in the league. And I remember going to that game, even though the Texans did look really good, I remember thinking there was no way the Packers and Aaron Rodgers were going to lose that game. And of course, I think Rodgers had like 6 touchdown passes in that game or something ridiculous. I mean, he had 2 to James Jones, 2 to Jordy Nelson, 1 to Tom Crabtree. I mean, it was a clinic.
Just so everyone knows, Jake does not have these numbers in front of him. He's just pulling this from his mind. I just thought that people should know this.
It was a great game. I can still remember most of it pretty clearly.
I don't remember it at all.
So, well, right.
I have a real bad memory.
That was actually, I mean, that game happened before we even met, so that's how long ago that was. But yeah, they came in and they kind of, you know, silenced all the critics and the doubters. And, you know, that season, they had a couple of pretty bad games. The home opener, they got, you know, kind of handled by San Francisco. Of course, there was the Fail Mary game. Like I said, the loss to the Colts when they had the game in control and then just totally lost it. So it kind of reminds me of that. I'm not going to say they're going to come in and blow out the Rams like they kind of did with the Texans. I think they won that game. Like, I think it was like 42-21 was the final score.
Now, that would be a game that could really change the season if we did that to the Rams.
Oh, I mean, if that happened, absolutely. I think the smart money obviously is not on that happening. But
oh, it'd be great.
The thing is, stranger things have happened. I mean, no one thought the Bills were going to beat the Vikings earlier this season, and then they did. So while it doesn't look great this weekend, I'm not going to say 100% Packers lose. Although I'll say right now, I guess let's just make the prediction right now. I do think the Packers will lose the game. You know, like I said, Rams are the best team in the league. Their offense is really good. Our defense is kind of meh right now. And I think their defense is going to cause problems for Rodgers, especially if Aaron Donald, you know, gets going and if their cornerbacks are playing like they should. I think it could be a relatively close game, but I think the Rams are going to score a lot, and I think the Packers are not going to be able to score quite as much. So I'm going to pick the Rams to win this game 35-24.
Yeah, I really want to say that the Packers will win and say things like, you know, they have 2 weeks to prepare and we've gotten more healthy and Aaron is 2 weeks more healthy and he's got two more weeks with the rookie receivers if they need to play, you know, maybe Cobbs, blah, blah, blah. I want to say all this stuff and I hope most of it is true, but I still think even if that's all true, then the Packers right now are not a good enough team to go into LA, the best city in the world, and beat potentially the best football team in the world. I have faith they're going to keep it close, though. I really think that they need to have this season, and I think some of the veterans will know that. So I'm going to say it's a close loss, 24-27. Sorry, I threw you off there with the...
I think the Rams are only going to score 27 points. That's confidence right there.
You know, I'm hoping. Yeah. Come on, Pepin.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe, like, and yeah, that is the thing, too. You have 2 weeks to prepare for them. You think you should come out, you know, on top of your game, but when the opponent's this good, I mean, the Packers could do everything right, and the sheer talent of the Rams could still just overwhelm them. So
we can, as a Packer fan, maybe we can lean back on sort of the law of averages, that eventually sort of the Rams have to come back to earth. They're probably not going to go undefeated. They're probably going to lose a game, so why not they lose it to us? You know, as Jake and I said, we don't expect that. It would be great. Obviously, we're rooting for it, and hopefully all that stuff we said about, you know, 2 weeks and you get it all, blah, blah, hopefully that's right and they can pull it out, but it's going to be a tough one, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Packers, so, you know, we're putting the Packers to lose. It would be great if they win. They do play this week. It is the Fox Game of the Week, so I think unless you live in Northern California or Arizona, because that's the 49ers and Cardinals are also playing at this time, you'll pretty much get it. I looked at the, you know, TV maps this week, and pretty much, like I said, as long as you avoid Northern California or Arizona, the game will be on TV in your area.
So is that a 3:15 then kickoff?
3:30, I believe, because it's the Game of the Week, so okay. It's a little bit later so that the other games can finish. But yeah, so that's going to do it for our episode this week. Folks, as always, you can find Packers in Law, all past episodes, and this episode at packtothefuture.com. It is a fan network of a bunch of Packer fans across the country just kind of doing this because we like the Packers and we think it's fun. Go there for our podcast. There's three other podcasts you can listen to. There's articles. There's fantasy advice. There's all kinds of stuff. So
again, anything you could want.
Pretty much anything you can want.
There's a genie that will grant you wishes.
Well, I don't know if we should endorse that, but let's not sell false hope here.
Blood rituals that will gain you strength.
I mean, that sounds pretty cool.
I don't know why that's the next thing I thought of. It's a weird thing. Yeah, and also, you follow us at Packers in Law on Twitter. Jake does a great job of tweeting during the game. So even if you're not a huge podcast fan, maybe this is like your first time just listening to this because you're in traffic or something, like, follow him on Twitter. It's a great follow. I guess us. Sometimes I tweet stuff. It's mostly Jake because it's thoughtful and good stuff about
football. But if you want to follow Andy on Twitter, it's Andy_SMTH.
Yeah, Smith without the I.
Okay.
Not only will you get some great Packer content, you'll get a whole ton of soccer content and movie commentary stuff. So it's a really hodgepodge Twitter account. But you should definitely follow
me. Those three things are all interesting to you. Yeah,
follow very
you.
Small subset.
Follow Andy. Yeah, follow us at Packers in Law. Follow us on Facebook. We post some articles on there occasionally, and of course our podcast whenever we go live. But yeah, we will. We're watching the game this week in Los Angeles, hoping for what seems like an impossible win. And we will talk to you guys.